Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
Anthropologist Margaret Mead famously wrote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." Well, here's a story that illustrates Mead's words. From the easternmost part of Maine, not far from the Canadian border, a rugged landscape of lakes and forests. Laurie Sanders took a trip there and has our story.
The town of Grand Lake Stream is tiny, only 120 full-time residents. But since the 1860s, it's had a reputation as a premier fishing destination. The village is situated on West Grand Lake, which, with 14,000 acres, supports bass, lake trout, and one of Maine's only native populations of landlocked salmon. Steve Keith is an avid fisherman. We're about a mile up lake from town, and from this point, we can't see a single camp or boat or person, just sky and forest and water.
If you go from this place, eastern Maine, to Florida, there's nothing like it in between. This is in many ways unchanged from when the Abenaki and the Passamaquoddy tribe, which is still here and local, plied these waters in birch bark canoes. Their ancestors would look at it and see that it's the same.
And thanks to the dedication and tenacity of a small group of people, this place will look this way for generations to come.
We had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. You know, it seemed like we had to do something. And when we started talking to people, everybody said, go for it.
Jimmy Upham is a former schoolteacher and one of six locals who came up with an audacious plan to protect 342,000 acres surrounding the community of Grand Lake Stream. That means forests, wetlands, lakes, the all of it. It all began 10 years ago when Georgia Pacific, one of the nation's largest timber companies, sold 450,000 acres in and around Grand Lake Stream to an investment interest, with Wagner Timberlands hired to manage the property. At first, no one was concerned. Big timber companies had owned land around here for decades. But within a year, that sentiment changed, says fishing guide and logger Louis Cataldo. He says Georgia Pacific had already cut the forest pretty hard, so the townspeople assumed that the new owners would wait a while for the trees to grow bigger.
Well, what they did, they bought the land, they went around and really cut, you know, everything that was left that was saleable. And we could see this happening, and it kind of upset us because we really care about these woods. You know, it's important to our lifestyle.
The local economy here depends almost entirely on healthy forests and pristine rivers and lakes. Cataldo says with the extensive cutting they observed, these qualities were being jeopardized. Even worse, Steve Key says there was a real threat that the timber company would start dividing up the land and selling it off as house lots.
What we were concerned about was that all of the shoreline would be subdivided and developed, and it would ruin the character of the area. If you want to experience that, you just go south of Bangor to any of the lakes in Maine or New Hampshire that are ringed with camps. The water quality goes down, the noise increases, and you don't have an experience in nature like you can here.
Faced with this, a group of people came together. It included loggers and fishing guides, lodge owners and mill workers, lawyers, and former business executives. It also included locals like Cataldo and summer people like Keith. Their first idea was to buy a buffer around West Grand Lake, but as they talked to more people and other organizations, the scope of their project grew bigger and bigger. After 2 years, they negotiated with the timber company to buy 27,000 acres as a community forest and purchase the development rights on another 312,000 acres. But there was the price, $32 million. And a fundraising expert had told them the most they could hope to raise was $2 million. Again, Jimmy Upham.
The numbers were numbers none of us had ever dealt with before. And part of it, I don't think we had any concept of what 2 million was. And if we didn't know what 2 million was, the going from 2 to 32 didn't matter a hill of beans.
And Cataldo says by then, people were fired up and the group felt an obligation to try.
It was terribly frightening because we surely didn't want to fail. You know, it was just terrifying to think that we had to raise that kind of money. But we kept pushing on, and a few key people told us that we could do it, you know, and of course, them's the ones we wanted to listen to.
To make it happen, the group formed the Down East Lakes Land Trust, hired Steve Keith as the executive director, and pulled in a key partner, the New England Forestry Foundation, an organization with a similar commitment to sustainable forestry, recreation, and wildlife habitat protection. And it had extensive fundraising experience. Over the next several years, the partnership hosted events, led field walks, talked to prospective donors, and donations came in, ranging in size from a single dollar to a $7 million gift from a private foundation. In 2005, they signed the papers on the land, but Keith says they were still short of their fundraising goal. And that's when the New England Forestry Foundation did something creative and risky.
We still needed $6 million. And in order to do that, the New England Forestry Foundation put up as collateral a forest they owned in eastern Massachusetts. And then we spent another 2 years raising that $6 million. That may have been the most difficult part, because raising money after you've closed on the property is extremely hard. People aren't motivated to give you money at that point.
But last year, the Down East Lakes Land Trust and New England Forestry Foundation finished raising all $32 million. And with that, they protected more than 60 lakes and ponds, 400 miles of lakeshore, and some of the best loon habitat in the state of Maine. They also kept the land on the tax rolls, with most of it in working forest. And Louis Cataldo says they also assured public access for recreation to all of it. Anyone can go there to hunt, fish, hike, or canoe.
When you ride up the lake and look at what we've protected and knowing that it's going to be like that forever, it does definitely make you feel real good. I'm very proud of what we've done, and I feel lucky that I, you know, got to be part of it.
But they're not quite done. Earlier this year, the Land Trust began working to protect the last big parcel, a 21,000-acre block along West Grand Lake with 15 miles of lakeshore.
We can't rest. If we miss a deal like this, it'll never come back to us.
And the asking price? Just $24 million. For Living on Earth, I'm Laurie Sanders.
Just ahead, new life springing up where the Iron Curtain came tumbling down. Stay with us on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.